In this episode, we'll hear from a nonprofit expert and one of my favorite clients all about how to find donors to start a nonprofit, what happens to the money you receive and how it can be used, how to use change management to go with the flow, why passion matters so much to success, how having an amazing team that believes in the cause as much or more than you do matters. If you have ever thought about starting a nonprofit, this is the episode for you. Hey, Amanda Ross here, and in this episode, we're going to hear from Lynn Hand, the executive director for the nonprofit organization Family Education Center in the Toronto area. She has so much knowledge to share and such a passion for what she does and who she serves. It's infectious, guys. Trust me, this one, you're going to be feeling all that she's given out. Lynn has been part of the nonprofit, the Family Education Center, since 2002. She was a volunteer, she was a parent educator, to now working her way through and now becoming the executive director. She has a wealth of knowledge in the financial arena and brings real frontline knowledge to her leadership role and makes all the decisions with the best interests of the clients in mind. Lynn and I met through another client, who I also call a friend, Grace Churchill, and we just fit perfectly. Over a four-month period, I developed and designed their online learning membership website that houses 12 online courses. I'm now working with them to create four new courses that are highly interactive for the adult learner, and we're already focusing and thinking about some other really cool projects that we're going to tackle in the next couple of years. Working with Lynn and her team at the FEC has been amazing. I appreciate all of them so much. Before we get into our discussion, have you ever thought about how to talk to your target market the best way that you can? I know that I used to. I used to go, how? I don't understand this. People keep telling me that my brand has to relate and I don't know really what that means. Then I figured it out and I know how to do it now. It's working for me and I would love to make it work for you. So head over to brandinasnap.com/allthethings to download the killer workbook that I put together just for you. All the Things has no spaces, so make sure you just keep it tight, keep it together, brandinasnap.com/allthethings. And if you're like me, you're gonna like this a lot because it's tactical, actionable, and real. I really don't want you to miss it, guys. So if you are listening to this and you do not have data, then I want you to take out your phone, add a quick reminder to your calendar to get the download later today. And if, of course, you love voice apps like I do, because Google Home is my gal, then say, hey, Google, remind me to grab the download for Brandon Snap in an hour, or Siri or Alexa, if you're a Siri or Alexa kind of gal. Now, at the end of this episode, I have another cool tool for you to try out. I've been looking for a really easy way to keep my to-dos all in order and all figured out and keep me on track and organized. I have a ton of what I'm trying to do in a day, so I need to know what I need to focus on, what's coming up, you know, what am I behind on really quick. And I finally found something that works and makes my life less difficult. I'll tell you more about it after our talk with Lynn. All right, let's get into it and chat about nonprofits with Lynn. I'm so excited today to welcome Lynn Han Fitzpatrick. She is the executive director of the Family Education Center right near Toronto, so very close to me. She is also one of my favorite clients I've ever had. So thank you, Lynn, so much for talking to us today about nonprofits.
Well, thank you for having me, and you're one of my favorite consultants, so thank you.
That's right. That's amazing. So, Lynn, you've been doing, how long have you actually been in the nonprofit arena?
So I started actually in the exact same organization that I've been now about 18 years ago. I was pregnant with my first daughter and I just wanted to be the best parent I could be. So I took one of their courses and I loved it. So I became a volunteer and then I became the bookkeeper when they needed a bookkeeper. And then I became a certified parent educator and then I became the executive director. So I've kind of moved through all of the facets of the not-for-profit sector with them.
And so how long have you actually been in this position?
This position I've been for about 4 years. And I took over when our previous executive director left and the board just approached me to see if I would be interested in becoming the executive director, which I didn't think I was qualified for, but I'm realizing that my financial background has been a huge asset to the position.
Nice. And so this, some people may or may not know what you do, but why don't you tell them what is the Family Education Center? What do you guys do?
So we offer parenting courses and workshops throughout the region of Peel and online. So we've been in existence since 1974. And the one key thing with our organization is that we are parent to parent. So we are peer support. So every single parent who facilitates one of our courses is a parent themselves, and they've been in the situation that the parents are in. So for example, if I had a two-year-old, I would not be facilitating a parenting teens course because I don't know what it's like to have a teenager yet. So that's the peer mentoring piece that we offer, which is very unique. And it creates a warm, sort of welcoming environment for parents that they don't always get in a counseling environment.
You guys do both, like you said, online courses, you do in-person education as well, right? So people will come to you and actually take your courses. And also you do, you're going to be doing what we've talked about. You're going to be doing Facebook Lives. Have you done any of those yet?
We have. We started them in June. Nice. And they're hugely popular. Yeah, they've been going great.
Oh, amazing. That's so good. I'm so excited for you. I didn't even realize that was happening yet.
Yeah, every Wednesday That's so night, awesome. 8 p.m.
Oh, there you go. Eastern time, people, Eastern time.
That's right.
So can you talk to us a bit about sort of as you've been going through your journey, what was the most challenging moment for you and how did you handle that?
As the most challenging moment was when I first started, getting acclimatized to being stuck in the middle between the board of directors mm-hmm. and staff. Mm. So I had no idea how difficult it would be to, you know, I always thought, I think I'm very good at building relationships. And so I thought I had a really great relationship with our board and I had a really great relationship with our staff. But becoming executive director can be a very lonely place mm-hmm. because you are balancing, confidential information with the board, confidential information with the staff. You know that you cannot share some things with the other groups. And it's really important that you maintain that confidentiality. You are working in the best interests of the board of directors. You're working in the best interests of the staff, which isn't always one and the same thing. So sometimes it can be really challenging and you feel a little bit stuck in the middle and there's no one really within the organization that you can turn to because you would breach confidentiality.
Right.
So it can be a bit of a lonely position and it also is, it really is balancing and nurturing those relationships on both sides so that you can help one side understand what the other side might be feeling without giving away information that was given to you in confidence.
Yeah, that is really hard. So I totally hear what you're saying because when I was in leadership roles, it's the same thing because you're working with sort of the owners of the company.
Yes.
And then you've got a team of people, right? So yeah, it's super hard to manage that and sort of, and feel good every day about what you're doing, right? And feel like you're still a part of it, even though you do feel a little off kilter.
Yes.
Yeah. So you also mentioned the board. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't understand what that is in a nonprofit. Why don't you give us the whole, give us the whole sort of view of what is a nonprofit in general? What is that? Why is it different than a normal company? And what is a board and why do we need them?
Okay. So really good question. So, I always say that not-for-profits are expected to do everything better on less. So we are accountable as a not-for-profit for every single dollar, every single cent that we spend. So every dollar that's given to you, whether it be through donation, whether it be through funded agencies, whether it be through foundations, it is all fundraised dollars and it's public funds that you're dealing with.
Right.
So you have to be highly accountable for those funds. And I think it's really important that you're transparent and that you are clear in terms of where that money is being spent. We also have a board of directors that kind of oversees the organization as a whole. So what happens is in a corporation, your CEO is the top. In a not-for-profit, that's not the case. The CEO is actually the middle person, and then the board of directors is in charge of the entire organization. So the board of directors is in charge of all the governance. So governance would be policies, making sure that your bylaws are intact, making sure that your members feel good about everything, reporting out to funders through an annual general meeting and your annual report. And then the executive director is in charge of the operations. So by operations, I mean the staff, executing contracts, letters of employment, doing reporting, applying for funds, all of those sorts of things, programming, all of that stuff.
When you say the donors, what does that mean? Are they just people that you just get money from? They give you $5 here and there, or what else could that mean?
Yeah, so it can come in a number of forms. So it can be, you know, an individual giving us $5. Mm-hmm. It could be a corporation giving us a donation of $1,000 towards a certain program or towards operational expenses. Or it could be a funded agency such as the Region Appeal, United Way, Ontario Trillium Foundation, who we write grant applications and then they either approve or disapprove them. And if they approve them, they send us funding based on that application. So you need to be sure in that application what you're asking for is exactly what you need. Because more often than not, what you request is what you get. And you need to be able to spend it in those exact same categories that you're funded for.
Right. So yeah, can you explain a little bit about that piece? Because I think people don't really get that either. So if you say we have a marketing budget of $10,000, oh, we need to build this technology thing. Can we use that $10,000?
Right. So that's a good question. So with some funders, the answer is yes and no. So with some funders, they are very specific in their categories. So technology might include an IT consultant and a software budget and a budget for your hardware and another budget for, you know, sort of expenses that are related to that, such as internet and telephone and things like that. Other funders will just have one lump sum category that says technology, $10,000. And you can spend that any way you want that's related to technology. And then when you report back to your funder, you need to say, this is how we spent it. And this all was lumped under technology. If it's more defined, like in the first case, then you need to spend it exactly the way they say. So even though you might need $2,000 for subscriptions, you might only get $500. So you have to be really aware of the subscriptions that you're purchasing, making sure that they're going to work for what you need. And if not, you need to go back to that funder and say, you know, I see that I have $500 here and I might have $5,000 in the you know, say the laptop fund, but I really need to move some dollars from the laptop fund into the subscription fund. Can I do that? I would not move any dollars without talking to a funder first, because again, these are public funds. Mm-hmm. So how they are designated is exactly how you should spend them. But I also very much believe that if you have a strong relationship with funders, you are able to go back to them and be completely transparent and say, you know, I thought this is what it was going to look like, but actually it's looking more like this. Can we move the money around? 9 out of 10 times the funder is going to say yes. It's if it's in the same category, move the money around. But there are times where the funder might say, no, you know, we can't do that. And then you just have to change direction. You have to make sure that you're able to be flexible enough to change the way you were going to do things, to work with the dollars that you have.
Because I think we actually had to do that at one point. We took some money from somewhere else.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've had to do that a few times. Because if you think about it, when you make a grant application, you know, you're making a best guess as to what you're going to use. When you actually start developing something, it can look totally different than what you thought it was going to, right?
Right.
It's like opening Pandora's box, right?
Yes.
You can run into all kinds of problems. Maybe you have to upgrade your security and all those things that you didn't even think about when you were writing the grant application. So most funders are aware that when you write an application and you actually execute a project, they realize that you might not have, you know, sort of thought of everything that you're going to run into. So they're usually quite flexible, but there are times where they can't be flexible. Mm-hmm. And so you have to be willing to be flexible yourself. And really, I would say the key is being able to think out of the box.
Right.
So it's challenging, but you have to be able to say, okay, I only have $500 for this. What is out there that I can access for $500 that's going to do this job? You know, you might need to cut back on some of the deliverables or certain expectations that you had, but you got to start thinking out of the box. It's the only way you're going to survive in a not-for-profit.
People don't, they know that there are not-for-profits out there. They, you know, probably donate to them and maybe do some events related to it, but they don't really understand how it works behind the scenes, right? And there's actually, it's substantially, I think, more detailed and more work than a normal corporate in many ways.
Oh, I agree. I agree totally. Because there is that accountability factor.
Yes.
So, you know, when you're in corporate, I don't want to say money just starts flowing from everywhere, but it kind of does. Mm-hmm. And you can dip into pots that you don't have to check with anybody, right? You can say,
exactly.
Oh, let me pull it from here. Let me pull it from there. You cannot do that in not-for-profit. If you are funded for something, it needs to come from that pot. And if it doesn't, you have to be accountable as to why you pulled it from that pot. And, you know, if you're not transparent and you're not sort of being forward with why you need to do this and what you intend to do, it can come across as fraud. Because again, it is public dollars that you're dealing with. These people are making donations based on expectations. So you need to uphold those expectations when you're spending that money. So it really is doing more and doing better on less.
If I was someone and I said, you know, I want to start a not-for-profit. I, you know, want to get into this. I really want to help people in this way or whatever it is. How would they find these funders? Where do they go? Is there like a list somewhere that you can just be like, oh, here's all the funders. Like, how does that happen?
There's a few of those actually.
Oh yeah.
You can Google it.
Yes.
But you're not going to get, first of all, the full information on that funder, for example. And you could also be a little bit misled. So I'd be very careful going that route.
Okay. Tell me why, what does that mean? What do you mean by that?
So there are some foundations out there that are set up who are, you know, they're valid and they've got, you know, they've got licenses and all those things in place. And that's fantastic. There are others out there who are misleading and perhaps may not be on the up and up.
Oh.
So you may think that you're applying for some funding from a foundation, but that foundation is maybe not registered, or that foundation is not using its funds in the appropriate way. You really want to do your research on the foundation that you're applying to, how they use their funds, where they distributed their funds over the past few years of funding, making sure that they work with integrity. Because you could, if they say, yeah, we're going to give you $5,000 and then they pull out on you and you really have no recourse, you could have already started a project knowing that $5,000 was coming and now you don't have your $5,000 to cover that project. You have to be really careful around making sure that they're legitimate and making sure that they, you know, they sort of have a good history in terms of how they've funded in the past. And then the other thing I find is that sort of the credible foundations are all on what I call listservs. So you might get a call from, we use Imagine Canada. That's the one that we use.
Okay.
And it's a membership. So we pay, I believe it's $500 a year that we pay right now, Canadian. And it's an annual membership where we can go in and we can type in everything that we do, and then it will pop up with all of the foundations that sort of are geared towards, you know, families or violence against women or whatever it is that we're doing. And then we can go in and look at those foundations, and there is a complete history on those foundations.
Oh, so that's neat.
Yes, it's amazing. It is your best check on foundations. They talk about how long they've been around, how they were established, what they're looking to fund. And then they have sort of examples of who they've funded in the past. So, you know, if you see a foundation that funds basically around $2,000, you don't want to go making an application for $10,000. You know that, you know, if you look at their history and you see, generally speaking, they're between $1,500 and $2,500 for everybody, and you go applying for $10,000, you're not making a reasonable ask to that foundation.
Mm-hmm.
So you just want to be aware of those things. You really want to check things out. You don't just go filling in an application and sending it off and hoping for the best. You want to make a reasonable ask of what people are able to provide.
And so when you are doing this, the ask, like, so you've found somebody, you say, okay, this is what I want. So you now have to do this grant application. What does that look like? Do they tell you what you need to fill out, or is it a standard way that you do it, or how do you figure out what you're sending to them?
So there's every foundation is different.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them have online portals where you go in and their application is all online, and then you click the submit button and off it goes. The other ones are still by mail, so by paper.
What?
Yeah, I know, snail mail.
Whoa!
They won't accept it any other way. Some of them are still by fax.
Oh my
some
gosh.
Some of them are by email. So they're all totally different. So you have to really keep clear in your mind which foundation likes to communicate in which way.
Right.
Because you might have one that says, we prefer you phone and inquire. You better be making sure you're phoning them all the time, because clearly they value that voice-to-voice communication.
Right.
If someone else says, please, emails only, don't be phoning these people. They don't want phone calls, right? They're pretty
right.
clear
They're
in
me.
What they
yeah.
want.
Don't call me.
So making sure – yeah, that's me too. Text me, email.
That's right. Text me all day.
That's right. Exactly. So – and then oftentimes they will all have a list of what they want. So – primarily, they want your financial statement, your most recent audited financial statements, or your year-to-date financial statements. They want a list of your board of directors, and then they just want sort of an outline of what you're asking for, as well as some stats. It's always really good to add stats on what you've done, how many people you've served, what was the impact on those people, because that's your case for support, right?
Right.
That's your story. What I will caution against, though, is if there is a funder that says, you know, letter of intent, send a letter of intent, don't give too much information in that letter of intent, because all they're asking is to get to know you, right? They want to start establishing a relationship. So if you send too much information, they're probably not even going to look at it. I would say if their directions are clear, follow their directions exactly.
Yeah, it makes sense for sure. Right? Especially because you're really trying to get something from them. So it's important to, you know, not waste their time and do exactly what they need so that it's not, you know, you haven't made it more complicated for them to say yes.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Now, and when you get the money, because some people aren't sure about this, it's a donation. You don't pay this back. It's
right.
Right. It's money now. You don't have, there's not an IOU.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right.
The only time you would pay it back
mm-hmm.
is if you had money left over. So
okay.
I can give you an example. We had a $3,000 donation to do courses and workshops throughout Mississauga only. And we were not allowed to go out of that regional boundary with this $3,000. So we were looking at different community centers that we could do our courses at, and the year was almost up, and two of those programs were canceled due to weather. So we ended up paying the foundation back the $500 that we didn't use, because we weren't able to extend it past the deadline of the December 31st deadline. And we weren't able to say, for example, do them in Brampton, because that was out of the boundary that the foundation would allow.
Right.
So that would be the only time you want to give it back, is if you haven't spent it all.
Financially, keeping track of this is like really, really, you got to be really in check. Like,
oh, yeah. You have to be on it. We actually hired somebody to come in and set up our financials so that we don't have your standard income statement. What we have is down the left-hand side, we have all of the revenues and expenses like a normal statement would be. But then we have columns in QuickBooks, which allow us to say, for example, that this donor gave us $5,000 and here's all of the allocated expenses that apply to that $5,000. So that donor has his own column. So if he were to call me up today and say, Lynn, how much of that money have you spent? I can look down and say we spent $3,200 and we intend to spend this much by the end of September, for example. So that I'm not trying to rifle through one bank account and figure out how I spent his money. Because what ends up happening is if you're putting all the money, let's say I get 10 different donors and all of that money goes into one bank account, how would I ever know how I've spent that money appropriately if
right.
I'm not tracking it on a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
It's very detailed. And that's why I think it's really great if if you're going to be an executive director, either take an accounting course or have some kind of financial background.
Yes.
Having that is, I would say, essential to being accountable to those funds, because You're accountable to your staff, you're accountable to your board, you're accountable to your funders, and you're accountable to the public. So you really are on the line for every single cent that is spent. And you want to make sure that if somebody asks, you can exactly detail where that money went at any time.
And so, and yes, and also with them, they also have specific things that you might have to do, right? Because I know with some of the courses we built out, we have specific surveys and other funders want a different survey.
Yes. Yes.
Everybody exactly. wants different stuff.
Yeah, exactly. You have to make sure that you know what you are responsible for each dollar that you are funded for. So, for example, United Way funds us and we have a number of different indicators that we have to report back to them on. And those indicators might be different than the ones that we have to report to Ontario Trillium Foundation, for example. So we have to make sure that we're asking the right questions in the right programs so that we can report back on those funds.
Right. Wow. It's a lot of logistics.
It is.
Yes.
It is a lot. And everything is always changing. So you have to be prepared to roll with the punches.
Yes.
So, you know, United Way of Peel just merged with United Way of Greater Toronto.
Oh.
So some of their policies are changing, some of their procedures, some of the application guidelines, some of the indicators. So you have to be willing to at any point say, okay, this is how we used to do things. This is how we now have to do things, right?
Right.
So it's an ever-changing environment. You really have to be flexible and adaptable. And I would say change management is essential because if you have a staff, I have a staff that's been with us for many, many years. I think almost everyone has been with us over 10 years. And a couple of the ladies have been with us for 40 years. So when things change now, they're used to the way things used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And change is very difficult for some people. So you have to recognize that and you have to buffer that impact on them, but still make the changes to be accountable to your funder. So that again is the pull that you have, right? There's things you have to do, but you also have to be aware of how it's impacting your staff at all times.
And so would you say like, is that sort of piece being, you know, being able to sort of manage the staff or being able to manage the money? Like what is the toughest part about this for you?
That's a really good question. I have a great staff. So
yes, you do, by the way.
Say yes, thank you. I think they're fantastic, actually. And so I can't say that actually managing them has been really difficult. They're all very just good people who love what we do and are committed to the cause. And I would say if you have people that are committed to the cause, you will make your job 10 times easier. I would also say that if you have people who are willing to work well with others, that's going to make a huge difference for you. If you've got someone who says, well, that's not in my job description, because it's always changing, it's an ever-changing environment, that's going to create a very stressful management situation for you. I would say the toughest part for me, I don't know, I love my job, so I don't really know what's tough about it. You know what I think is the toughest part is timelines and deadlines. So what I find is that funders all want everything all at one time. So most funders end on their year end is March 31st, which means all of your reports and all of your proposals are due by April 30th. So the month of April is an absolute write-off for me. Because I'm literally just in my office doing reports, applications, proposals, all of that stuff. And then I can breathe again by May.
Right.
And the same thing in November. So they want 6-month reports in generally October, November. Those 2 months are a complete write-off. So balancing that is very difficult. Everybody wants everything at the same time. And during that time, you still have staff to manage who have everyday questions,
mm-hmm.
and you still have a board to answer to. So you still have your monthly board meeting, you still have your committee meetings every month, and you're still responsible for attending that board meeting. So trying to squeeze all of that into those tight, tight timelines is very difficult. I would say that's the hardest part of my job, I think.
Yeah, that does sound very difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I also would say, knowing, so Staying compliant is very hard. I'm not sure about other countries, but in Canada, the charitable rules are changing all the time, and you have to really be on top of that. So privacy legislation changes, it impacts your whole business. If HR legislation changes, it impacts your whole business.
Right.
You have to make sure that if they drop a bill tomorrow, you are changing your policies, your procedures, you're changing your letters of employment, your contracts, just to make sure that you're compliant across the board. So it's very hard to stay on top of all that. And sometimes you'll hear from someone, oh, did you know that this changed? And you're like, no, I didn't. And so now you have to go back and figure out when it changed, what the new rules are, and what you need to do to bring everything up to speed.
Right.
I would say that would kind of be hand in hand with one of the hardest things to do.
When you said that you love your job, what, tell me why you love it so much.
I think one of the main reasons I love it, well, there's a million. So the people, number one, the people are so fantastic. We seem to attract good people, and people who are just, like I said, committed to the cause. So it's almost like we're a little family, you know, we're another little family who is working towards a common goal. And I think that's a successful not-for-profit is when you have a strong mission and you're all very connected to that mission. So then it almost doesn't feel like work. It feels like you're all driving towards a goal, you know?
Right.
And then I just love it because I love, you know, I just love what we do. I think it makes a huge difference. I took my first parenting course, like I said, when I was pregnant, and I have established such amazing relationships in my life because of this, not just with my kids, because these skills are universal. I just have such strong relationships with really good quality people. And I think this has helped me develop that. So that's why I'm so passionate about this, because it helps me be a better person, and that brings good people into my life. So I think that's why I love it so much. I just am so grateful that I found it.
That's amazing. Yeah. It's like, you know, it's the universe, right? It's your, what, how you sort of treat other people and what you're putting out there. That's what you're attracting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think if you are not passionate about what you're doing, you shouldn't be doing it. Because especially in not-for-profit, it's different if you're in a corporation, it's a little bit different, but in a not-for-profit, you really are driving that mission and your leadership is what other people follow.
Right.
So if you're not passionate about your mission, go find a mission that you are passionate about, because everybody's following you to guide them to that mission. And if you, you know, if you come in and you think, yeah, well, this is a great job, but you know what? I really don't believe in what we do. That's a problem. Like that could pose a real problem, because it sets a culture for the entire organization.
Right.
So when I'm out at an event, or when I'm talking to my board or talking to the staff about how many parents we served, I'm genuinely excited about that. And I'm genuinely saying, look at the difference we've made.
Yes.
So if you have that genuine, authentic excitement about what you do, it really changes the culture and the morals in the organization altogether.
Oh, for sure. I can't even imagine, especially for a not-for-profit, because you're doing something different. Like you're really helping. Like that's sort of when I look at a not-for-profit, that's, you're really helping. Like you're really, really helping. Like there's companies that help people do things. Yeah. But a not-for-profit's like really helping. So if you don't love it, like I just feel like you're doing a disservice. Like you're really in the wrong place.
Yes, exactly. I feel like use your talents where your talents are. Use your passion where your passion is. Mm-hmm. I think that's the best life you can live, because it also makes you the best you that you can be. When you are fulfilled, you are better at your job, you're better in your relationships, you're better on your own, you're just better overall. And so I think when you're in a job that you just aren't loving, especially in not-for-profit, it has a ripple effect throughout the entire organization and people feel it. And I do know executive directors who, you know, they're just kind of riding it out to their retirement or whatever, and it's not the same. They have high staff turnover. They have high volunteer turnover. They don't recruit people who are committed to the mission because their passion isn't there. And when you're in not-for-profit, you have to have that because your staff don't make a lot of money in not-for-profit. We could probably be making double in a corporate environment than we make in not-for-profit. So you're not making a ton of money to do what you're doing every single day.
Right.
You have to love what you're doing. And there's ebbs and flows. So all of our staff have taken a pay cut in the past. If we had funding pulled out from under us, we've had staff who took pay cuts and hour cuts,
wow,
but they still stuck with us because they believe in that mission.
Right. That's
and
amazing.
So, yeah. So that's what really matters is waking up and feeling good about what you're doing every day.
So if someone wanted to start a not-for-profit today, what would you tell them? What's the first step they should take?
So the first thing I would do is get in touch with, is this really what you want to do?
Right.
And is it really what you think is going to make you happy? And do you think you can make a difference? Then I would take a look at your skill set and determine where you fit in the organization. Because just because you open the organization doesn't mean you have to lead it.
Right.
I know some people who have opened an organization and they are the program coordinator, but they're not the executive director because that is a different skill set that they don't have.
Right.
So know your strengths and work within your strengths and don't get stuck on a title. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Just be in the organization to do the good that you want to do. And don't worry about what your title is around that. And then I would say I would get in touch with your local government and your provincial government and your federal government and find out what all of the rules and regulations are in your area. Because every country is different, every province is different, and every region is different.
Right.
So you have to make sure that you know what all of the expectations are everywhere across the board, and also know what your reporting structure is like. So in some countries, you have to do only one report, and that gets fed out to all of the governments. But in other countries, Canada, for example, we do a regional report, we do a provincial report, and we do a federal report. And you have to know, what are those reports? When are they due? What do they require? You have to have all of that in place before you even consider opening a not-for-profit. Then you have to make sure you have a board of directors, so volunteers who want to sit on your board and help to build this organization. Then you start developing your bylaws, your policies, your procedures. And to do that, I would look at probably other not-for-profits that are well-established to say, what do their bylaws look like? What do their policies look like? Can I borrow some of them? Can I take from some of them?
Mm-hmm.
That's probably your best way to get going. Then you need to register as a not-for-profit, and that will look different no matter where you live. And then you have to decide if you're going to register also as a corporation or just a not-for-profit. So there are sort of two different routes that you can go. And then you have to register for HST. You have to determine, do I have to pay tax? And if I have to pay tax, do I have to register for that? So then you have to do that. And then you can finally open your business.
Okay.
So it takes takes a lot of research.
Yeah.
A lot of research. Yeah.
Yeah, just a lot of front end. But if you've got a really great thing that's going to really help people, it's totally worth it.
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah.
Yes. You know, we've gotten to a place where we've got your website going, your membership, your online courses, everything's going along. And now you're looking at some new tech pieces because you are, as much as you hate tech, you love tech.
Yes.
I know.
Yes. Yes, I do. It's a love-hate relationship,
yes.
But it definitely has helped us improve so much of what we do. So I can tell you 5 years ago or 4 years ago when I started as the ED, we were still doing everything manually. So the person that was answering our, I know that probably makes you cringe.
It does.
The person that was answering her phone was writing down every phone call that came in on a little spreadsheet, and then we would take that and we would manually add the number of phone calls that we got in a month, and then I would report that to the board. We would manually register people with registration forms.
Oh my gosh.
It was crazy.
That is crazy.
And then we had all these privacy laws that came into effect, and we realized we could no longer keep those forms. We're not allowed to keep them. So then we said, okay, this is not going to work. And I would say we went from being the Flintstones to the Jetsons in about 2 years because we literally realized that this is not working. It was taking way too much time. And I would say we have become so efficient because of technology. And now I'm so excited about where we can go, because now that we have our e-learning courses up and we have our podcasts and our PDFs and all of that stuff, we've got our membership, people can register online, all of that stuff. I would say now where we want to go is sort of the direct parent interaction pieces. So we want to look at launching a parent chat so people can log on to our website and chat with one of our facilitators at any time. We would like to look at developing an app, a parenting app, because we find that parents want the quick and dirty, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
They will take a course if they need a certificate for court or they've been mandated to do so. But because we are such a busy society, they want it fast, they want it quick, and they want as much information as they can get.
Yes.
So we're looking at ways that we can do that. Our podcasts are a really great way to do that. Our webinars will be a great way to do that. And now we're looking at the chat function as well as the app. And I think that will be a great way to just flush information out to parents. And they can access it kind of on their time, when they want, how they want. We looked at our download statistics for July, and we had 468 downloads in July alone.
Yes. Yes. I saw that. Podcast. Yes. Amazing.
And it's like, oh my God, we have never served 468 parents in a month ever.
Yeah.
So it just blows my mind that that's what parents are seeking, is those quick parenting strategies. So we're looking at ways that we can bring that to them in the world that they live in, because in this day and age, everybody has a phone. Right? Not everybody has a computer, but everyone has a phone. Mm-hmm. And so it's really interesting to us that we can take this information, get it to how parents can access it, and make it free of charge for them.
That's amazing. It is such an exciting time. I'm excited with the app. I think that's amazing. I think you've got so much exciting things happening. I love it, love it, love it. And I love that you're so open to technology. A lot of people are not, but I love that you're sort of like, give it to me. Let's see what we can do with it. That's amazing.
Yes, I don't like it, but I can tell you that I love it. So it's like,
yes,
when I start thinking about it, it just makes me cringe, because I think I am a what if person under stress. So I'm always thinking about what could go wrong. And with technology, because we don't have a huge capacity internally to, you know, to manage technology, it's always scared me. What I can tell you is that we've had a couple of IT consultants who have not really understood what it is that we wanted. Mm-hmm. So what ended up happening was we built stuff that we couldn't maintain and then they couldn't maintain.
Right.
So we've really had a couple bad experiences. And what I feel really good about now is that we've found someone like yourself who works with what we're looking for and creates something that we have the ability to learn. So the videos that you do for us are amazing, amazing, amazing.
Yes, I know you guys like those. Yes.
We would never be able to, even if you wrote all of that stuff down on a piece of paper, we could not follow it.
Yeah.
For some reason, the videos were able to stop them, go back, stop it again, go back 100 times, and then figure out what it is we're doing. Mm-hmm. But you make it so easy and clear for us that we have built our own capacity internally to manage our own website. So now it's given me confidence to open up more to IT stuff, because it's not as scary for me as it used to be.
Yes. Yay. I'm so excited.
So thank you. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I appreciate that so much. Thank you.
Wow. Okay. So I know that it sounds like nonprofits are tricky, and they are. It's very different than having a corporate like business. But I think having a nonprofit and being able to serve others in such a different way is so powerful. So if you want to learn more about Lynn or the FEC, or just pick her brain a little bit about nonprofits, I mean, she would love to help with you. Check out the links in the show notes or visit familyedcenter.org. That's familyedcenter.org. familyedcenter.org.
Time for a tip.
All right, guys. So I mentioned already that I've been really struggling trying to figure out how to keep all my to-dos together and organized and sorted. And it's been making me crazy. I've been doing, you know, I'll think of something randomly. Sometimes it's at 3 o'clock in the morning because you know how it is. I know you know what I'm feeling, what I'm saying right now. So 3 o'clock in the morning, I'll wake up and be like, oh, damn, I got to do X, Y, and Z. Or, oh, what a great idea. I got to write this down. So I drop it into my calendar. And that's what I've been doing. And sometimes those things get lost because I go back to sleep after 3 o'clock in the morning. And in the morning, I actually forget, like when I really wake up, that I actually put something in my calendar. So sometimes things get lost. And just sort of keeping it on track, I've tried project management tools and things, but I'm constantly opening new tabs and da-da-da. And I can't have a project management tool open all the time, but I need something that I can go and just quickly go click and it's there and I know what's going on. I found it. I'm so excited. I love this tool that I found. It's the one. I love it because it works with Chrome, which is what I use when I'm doing anything on the internet. So it's always available. It just sits right up there with all my little icons and I just hit it and drop down and ba-bam, there's all my to-dos going on. I love it. So easy to add something. It's easy for me to check off what I've done. It's amazing. And they have a mobile app that syncs with your account. So I can add things right into my mobile and it's just on my to-dos. I love it. You can put different categories. You can have different lists for different things. You can add people if you upgrade, which I have. I mentioned before that I like to buy things if I believe in them. So I have upgraded. I have not upgraded to business. I think you actually have to upgrade to business to get all the teams, but I'm not sure because it's still a bit new to me. So I'm not totally sure. However, I am going to be creating a quick overview of how to use it on my Facebook group, B-Snaps, just like the podcast, for women onlinepreneurs. So head over there if you want to know more about it. The actual tool is called Todoist, Todoist. The link is in the show notes as well. But if you want to learn a little bit more, feel good about it, head over to the Facebook group, B-Snaps, join and learn more about it in the little overview I'm going to put together over there. Join B-Snaps anyways, because it's awesome and it's super cool to connect with women who are building engaging creative brands, get tips, live brainstorming sessions. We do watch parties, all kinds of cool stuff's going on over there. That is it for this episode. Catch you in the next one, guys. Have a kick-ass day.